Thank you. I'm very excited to be here, and in particular want to thank you for the correct pronunciation of my name and an awesome scheduling. So I'm going to start with two slides of just far out claims where you might not understand the words, except you'll understand more words thanks to the two previous talks, and then I'll try and actually do something. But the two might be somewhat unrelated, so I'm just going to show you the outcome, and then I'm going to show you some of the basic constructions. And, coffee or dinner, I can tell you how to go between the two. This is mostly, these slides will be on my webpage, except right now they're not for some reason. So check back in a couple of weeks when I'm back from vacation, and they'll be on there. Right. And also, all of this is joint work with Chris Woodward, and whenever there's anything chain level or A infinity, it's also Sikimeti Mao. So, let's see. Let me make some bold claims. So, right, I should say, so correspondences are very much not cobordisms. However, all of them will be Lagrangian. And there will also be a functor, and thanks to Octave, we have an vague idea that there's a Foucaille category associated to sufficiently good symplectic manifolds. So I'm going to take two of them, M0 and M1. And then there is some sort of Foucaille category of morphisms from M0 to M1, which now, in particular, will be Lagrangians in the product. So one example will be Lagrangian submanifolds in a product. So those are objects in Fuch of M0 times M1. And the theorem that we're after when we say functoriality is we would like a functor from these guys to functors between the Foucaille categories. Right? So in particular, this guy here should give you a functor, which for some called Fuch of L0, 1, that should be a functor from Fuch M0 to Fuch M1. Our claim is we can do that. And then, this makes mirror symmetry people happy because it looks like something that we have for coherent sheaves. And so finally, we have sort of similar algebraic structures on the two sides of mirror symmetry. And it made Mohammed Abu Zaid happy because now he could say, well, what if this is the diagonal in, two symplectic manifolds that are the same except for every reversal of the symplectic structure, because then this functor here will be the identity functor. And so now one can say what it means to generate a Foucaille category, namely if you can write the identity as sort of split sum. It's like in vector spaces, right? If you can split the identity map in terms of vectors, then those vectors generate your vector space. And so with this sort of functoriality, one can say when does a Foucaille category get generated by a set of Lagrangian brains. Right, so that's one sort of type of result that is going to come out of what I'll be saying. Here's a completely different type. Well, depends on how much you like categories. So completely different result says, if you want to make a topological quantum field theory, really, you only need to represent things in the symplectic category. So a TQFT somehow takes closed N manifolds and cobordisms and makes maybe categories and functors out of them. And what we're saying is really you only need to make symplectic manifolds and Lagrangian correspondences out of them. What I haven't really said was what a correspondence is. Well, something like this. And moreover, we only need partial functors, so you only need to do it on very simple cobordisms, like handle attachments. And then you only need to check that whatever moves you have between different decompositions correspond to some sort of nice geometric composition of your correspondences. And I don't want to say much more about that.
Yeah.
So, just to say that here's something that has nothing to do with holomorphic curves. But if you can do this sort of topological construction, then we give you somehow a black box that does some sort of holomorphic curve stuff and produces categories and functors out of you that give you a nice TQFT. And this has sort of essentially been done for a couple of three-manifold invariants, and this work in progress for the four-manifold story, so to actually get 3 plus 1 TQFTs. So Chris and I did some sort of non-abelian gauge theory that sort of reproduces instanton something that should be instanton flow homology, which we haven't proven. And Tim Perutz and Yanky Lickhili have sort of written down symplectic versions of what should be Seiberg-Witten or Hilgard-Fleur theory. So, you can sort of, and the magic somehow of our thing is that one can prove that these are three and four manifold invariants without having to prove that they are equal to the gauge theory. Because that usually, somehow one needs some deeper magic to prove that, and somehow we've produced a framework in which one can prove invariants directly. All right, so what I'm going to do has something to do with mirror symmetry, has something to do with low-dimensional topology, does it also have something to do with symplectic geometry? Oops. There we go. So here's a sort of general criterion for when one of those correspondences will be non-displaceable by Hamiltonian diffeos. Namely, I'm still not really saying how this is a map, but we'll get there. So these correspondences sort of map Lagrangians in M0 to Lagrangians in M1. And if this guy has sort of a Fleur homologically non-trivial Lagrangian in its image, then itself it will be Fleur homologically non-trivial and hence will be non-displaceable. So examples of correspondences are symplectic reductions. So if you take, if you don't really know what a symplectic reduction is, you toast for a moment. So really there's a moment map, and what happens here is that the zero set of the moment map, really lies in M, so there's an inclusion there, but it can also get, there's a group acting on it, and so we can project it to something called the symplectic quotient, which simply is, a level set, actually, of our moment map, and the moment map maps to the Lie algebra of G. So this is sort of an interesting case of a correspondence because it's not just a symplectomorphism. It relates manifolds of different dimension. Right. And what I'm saying here essentially is that if you take a Lagrangian in here, then there's the correspondence kind of maps this way. And it maps this guy to its pre-image under this projection. And that will again be a Lagrangian. So if this guy, for toric manifolds, this could, for example, be one of the torus fibers. You can get all torus fibers this way. If this level set has a non-displaceable fiber, then of course the level set is non-displaceable within M, right? That was trivial. But it's also non-displaceable as a Lagrangian submanifold in M, in the product of the symplectic quotient in M, which is not trivial. So this way, for example, we get well, there's sort of various examples. There's sort of the easiest example is this, the three sphere sits in CP1 times CP2. And I guess there's various proofs for why this is non-displaceable. And you know, our proof is somehow, I like our proof because it's very conceptual. And somehow it says this three sphere is non-displaceable because its image in CP2 contains the Clifford torus, which has non-zero Fleur homology. And we can sort of simultaneously do the same in any dimension there, so we get a lot of sort of spheres times tori, which are all non-displaceable because they contain Clifford tori. So that's sort of more or less an old result. But also that this follows sort of straight up from our, as of now, sort of mostly published theory. The sort of new and still needing a little writing up is the Cherganov torus, which Francois was so nice to not define. So at least you're curious what this thing could be. Yours was, I think, in R4. So you won't be very surprised to see that you can sort of also, you know, close off the R4 to S2 times S2, and we still have a torus in there. Somehow interesting. It's not just the product of two equators. But what it does so I'm going to view it as a correspondence, so as some sort of generalized map from S2 to S2. But it's not a map because it essentially takes one point to two points. And so as such, it maps the equator to either a trivial double cover of the equator, or if you move this equator a little, you can get something like the red line here. There's sort of two copies of circles here. So that's a little more of an idea of what the Cherganov torus does. And somehow once we have this picture, we can sweat a little to make our own sense of immersed Fleur theory. And from this picture, essentially calculate the relative Fleur homology between the Cherganov torus and the standard product of two tori. So this boils down to the immersed Fleur homology of this picture, except from the higher dimensional understanding, we know that we need to count different things. So with these two intersection points of the black thing and the red thing, there's one in the front and one in the back. So what we realize is we need to, obviously there's sort of simple strips that we need to count, but there's also one foregone that needs to get counted. It actually gets counted with the same area as these guys, because there's some area gets lost in bubbles, which sort of complements this to the full quarter energy, quarter area of this two sphere. So in some sense, I'm also talking about immersed Fleur homology, except I don't think we can use Joyce's or anybody's definition, because we need to, you know, sort of keep stuff in mind that comes from higher dimensions. That tells us these foregones are good, others might not be good. There's some extra energy floating around. All right. So somehow all of this should come out of the same circle of ideas. Are there questions about the bold claims? No. Completely flawed you. So if you're totally lost, this is the time to wake up again. So I'm just going to start with... So I'm going to try to make a symplectic category. And I'm going to start one level lower than Octave did. So for me, I don't want Lagrangians as objects. I want symplectic manifolds as objects. And I'm going to make a symplectic category by making sense of string diagrams. And in the process, you'll probably get an idea of what string diagrams are. So, and what quills are. So let's see. Symplectic manifold. Well, I mean, for me, really, I mean, as an analyst, I do care about the symplectic form every now and then, but mostly I care about having some contractible set of almost complex structures that are nicely compatible. Right? So I'm gonna remember that there's a J, sort of some endomorphism section, squares to minus one, and gives me also a designated metric. And with that, I can make sense of my first string diagram. So if you just see a little piece of surface labeled by a symplectic manifold, well, everybody who does holomorphic curves thinks, all right, you know, that surface should be, you know, Riemann surface. I have S and T coordinates on it, at least locally. What I want to look at is maps to the symplectic manifold that satisfy dSU plus J dTu equal to zero. That's a nice, this is a little nonlinear because J depends on the base point U, but in some sense it's an elliptic Fredholm PDE. So we have some chance of making moduli spaces out of them, counting them, deforming them. So now, next, we want morphisms. Right, and so now I want morphisms between two different symplectic manifolds that may not have the same dimension. Right? And so I'm going to use this idea of a Lagrangian correspondence, which is just a submanifold in the product. And I'm going to reverse the symplectic form on one of the factors because I want the graph of a symplectic morphism to be an example of a correspondence. Right? That's the second example here, so the graph. If I actually have a map from M to N, then the graph of it is a Lagrangian submanifold in the product. Right? There's sort of other stupid examples. If I just have a Lagrangian M0 and Lagrangian M1, I somehow can take this correspondence between the two that's just the product that sort of makes the two not talk to each other. You know, sort of the line is broken because everything goes through the point. It may be interesting to note that it also, I can, if I just have a Lagrangian, I can also view it as a correspondence to a point or from a point to my symplectic manifold. Right? And finally, right, here's a symplectic quotient which I already had on the board. So this way we have, you know, a lot of sort of examples all under one notion. But now we're going to need to compose them. Oops. No, not yet. Right, before we compose them, let me just argue that there's some nice PDE somehow associated to these guys. Right, because, so it being Lagrangian in particular means that the tangent space of L is actually perpendicular to J times the tangent space of L. So it's something like a totally real subbundle. So locally it just looks like a real space in CN, which is good for analysis again. And so now comes the point where, well, if you've done holomorphic curves, you probably know that if you take a boundary, you want to map that to a Lagrangian submanifold. But somehow our string diagram here doesn't quite look like a boundary. So the string diagram has these two patches, and there's one common boundary component of the two patches that I want to label by a morphism in my category. So this Lagrangian is a Lagrangian in the product of M and N. So what can I do in terms of equations now? Well, I can look at maps from the two patches into the two symplectic manifolds, can ask both of them to be holomorphic. And now I can think of sewing together these two patches. Right, so if I restrict, I can restrict U to this line, I can restrict V to this line. Together, it gives me a map from the line into M times N. And I can ask that line to not just map into M times N, but onto my half-dimensional submanifold. Now, right, that is not quite a boundary condition. We call it a seam condition. And because these are patches, we call the whole thing a quilt. Right? Why is that well posed? It is because locally you can think of flipping this patch over. That means you sort of parameterize V. You make another map that sort of first flips across here and then takes the map V. So together you make a map from just this one side, just this one patch into, well, locally some complex vector space. And then the boundary, this truly is a boundary, so the seam becomes a boundary. And it just is supposed to map to a Lagrangian, which is some real vector space. And so we have a D-bar operator, yeah, with a Lagrangian boundary condition. So at least locally we get estimates. And then we can patch our estimates together to get global estimates. And then we can make fantastic mistakes proving transversality, but we can also fix them. So so we did, I think. But I'm not going to talk about that. So, yeah, we had a problem realizing that quilts can consist of more than one patch. But that's somehow the whole point of it. So, all right, so at least there's a PDE, but I haven't told you how we actually compose morphisms yet. So I need to do that. Let's see. So, right, I want to make a two category. So, and I'm only on level one right now. Right, so that's why there's a one on the composition. So if I have two correspondences, I ought to make a composed correspondence. And just like with relations, there's an obvious geometric way that says, well, let me just sort of write down in very fancy words how I would compose two maps if I just know their graphs, right? What I would do is I would take the intersection with the diagonal, right, in the middle, and then I forget the middle and just project to the two endpoints. That's this. Should I? I don't think this one, does this one work? It's off. Ah, right, so here's the projection and there's the intersection with the diagonal. Awesome, right? So that's the obvious thing we should do, except, well, intersections might not be transverse. Well, if that one is transverse, at least then the Lagrangian will be immersed. And actually, there's sort of a little bit of magic going on. So as soon as the projection is injective, it will actually be an embedding. So, and then dimensions work out, so this thing will be Lagrangian. And okay, lo and behold, we have a nice unit, the diagonal, right? If you compose with the diagonal, you get the same thing back out. But there's sort of two things that we don't really like with this. For one thing, we are not brave enough to do flow homology with immersed Lagrangians. In fact, we get the wrong results for our purposes if we tried to do that. And the other thing is if we try to orient things, there's always some shift in relative spin structures when you're working with diagonals. So we stepped away from that and said, well, can we do something smarter? So, well, we did something totally stupid, which turned out to be, well, somewhat powerful. So the totally stupid thing is to say, oh, we don't quite know how to make composition yet in our category. Let's just make it algebraically. Yeah. So we have two morphisms, one arrow from M0 to M1, one arrow from M1 to M2. Let's just declare that there is another morphism in our category, which is just this two-step arrow. Right. So there's a our category also has sequences of Lagrangians, except they don't live in the same symplectic manifold anymore. Right. So so what we're going to want to do is we want sort of sequences of correspondences that start at M and end at, you know, N. Or, you know, if you want a morphism from M to N, you can go through any other symplectic manifolds you please and go to the point as long as eventually you end up at N. And then we can do the silly thing and say, well, then we also allow ourselves the empty sequence that certainly has no good spin, that has only the trivial spin structure, so we don't get shifts in. So we have an actual unit now. All right. But we're going to want to turn this thing also into a two category, which means I need to make some sense of this string diagram now, where I have two symplectic manifolds labeling the patches and some sequences of of correspondences between here. So I need to say what the PDE is. And I'm just going to do that by drawing another picture. So this one line here labeled by a sequence just becomes a sequence of strips labeled with the actual submanifolds. So this one, this sort of seam condition labeled by a sequence just becomes a sequence of seams. Nice picture on the board, doesn't look incredibly exciting yet, but this is your first non-trivial quilt there. So, with that, we can try to start talking about what two morphisms should be in our category. Well, maybe, right, let me go back for a moment. So, if we just did this, you know, we completely forgot about geometric composition, right? But there's something geometric about it, so we probably want to understand it, right? And so what we would somehow like to say is that in good cases, algebraic and geometric composition are the same. How can we say they're the same? We need some sort of isomorphism between them. And in order to have an isomorphism between morphisms, we need two morphisms, right? So that's the reason why I need to talk about two morphisms, so I can say how the nice, always nice sort of weird algebraic composition, how could that be equivalent to this geometric composition? Yeah. I'm going to need a morphism between them. So, all right, here we go. So, this is sort of a weird type of review of Fleur theory. I'm not quite talking about Foucault categories here. I'm just talking about the homology level. Right. So the morphism space, let's first think about two Lagrangian cobordisms. Correspondences. Replace all, there will be no cobordisms in this talk. Well, they were in the TQFT, so Lagrangian should always be followed by the word correspondence. Right? So L prime is a correspondence from M to N, and L is also correspondence from M to N, and I need to make sense of, well, what I want to put into this string diagram should be a P, should be a morphism between L and L prime. And I'm going to say that this morphism space is just some Fleur homology group. And, well, really, I'm not even going to tell you what the differential is. I'm just going to tell you that it's generated by the intersection points of L and L prime. Right. So if I do that, then when I look at this picture here of, this is my string diagram. I need to represent that by some PDE. So I'm going to draw the same picture. So the only thing is now I have this puncture in my Riemann surface. So I do the same thing. I ask the maps to be holomorphic. I ask the seams to have, you know, Lagrangian seam values. And I'm going to ask that if I take U and V together in some sense and converge to this puncture, I would like to converge to that intersection point. Right. And so then you should add something about finite energy and transverse intersection of L and L prime, and then this is some well-posed PDE. All right. So except I've only told you now what the morphisms are for simple correspondences. I haven't told you yet what I do with generalized correspondences, because I enlarged my morphism space. So I also need to enlarge my two morphism space. So that's if I have a sequence as a morphism from M to N and another sequence L prime as a morphism space from M to N. Well, I can view this as some sort of cyclic sequence. So I'm going to just rename things. And I need to tell you what, I need to at least tell you what the intersection points are that generate my Fleur complex. Right. So this is the intersection point of some cyclic sequence of correspondences from M0 to M0. And the generators of my Fleur complex will be tuples of points, one in each symplectic manifold, that sort of are related by the correspondences as you go around. Right. So if you do some dimension counting, that's sort of generically isolated. Yeah. No. So let's do an easy example. So let's say I have M0, M1, M2 here. So what I'm asking is for one point in M0, one point in M1, one point in M2, and I want the pair P1, P2 to lie in this correspondence. I want P0, P1 to lie in that. Right, and P2, P0 needs to lie in this guy.
So I guess I'm one level higher than this, I'm in the purple bracket there.
In the purple bracket, okay. This P now is okay, good, yes. So let me draw the picture that would correspond to this, so really here I have a puncture, so I should put a P underline here, right? And so things might be labeled by M0, M1, M2. And so what I'm saying is if I converge into from this side, everything goes to P0. Right. If I come in from this side, everything goes to P1. And from this side, everything goes to P2. Yeah, I was sort of deliberately not precise there, I guess. This just means if you think of this as a cylindrical end with some seams, you know, everything goes to a constant out at infinity. All right, so that's, well, a bold claim that we can make sense of these pictures. Yeah. Yeah, you just need to put relative spin structures and orientations on everything, and then it should, yes. Well, there's a draft on our web page that says that has the title orientations for pseudo-holomorphic quilts. Yeah. We've thought hard about this. Trust us, we are somewhat confused, but we're sure we can make sense of it. Yes, and I deliberately say Z and not Q because we're going to get ourselves into a situation where there's no bubbles. So, all right. So now I've made sense of these diagrams, and in order to define a two category, all I really need to do is I need to tell you how each of these diagrams actually defines a two morphism. So if you know something about two categories, then that'll make sense to you. If you don't, you just have to believe me for now. And so I'm just going to do that in a way that, you know, Fleur theory people will not be too afraid of. So if you see some diagram, you know, for example, I've written down the two diagrams. So this is a diagram for vertical composition of two Fleur morphs. Well, there's P is a Fleur class between L and L prime. P prime is a Fleur class between L prime and double prime. I should compose those somehow, right? And on the right one is a little more complicated. Here I already want to actually compose L0, 1 and L1, 2. And there's another pair of correspondences that I want to compose. And somehow now this comes with a pair of morphisms, of two morphisms between them, and I want to compose them along with it, right? And so now somehow these pictures should make a two morphism. This should be a Fleur homology class, and it should be a Fleur homology class between L and L double prime. Right. And so I'm going to do this by just sort of declaring the outside here as a puncture. And I'm going to count solutions to my PDE of things that converge to a certain intersection point Q outside, and then we're going to make this abstract sum of, you know, having counted times Q. Right. Then there's a question whether that actually, I mean, that's certainly in the complex, why is that a well-defined homology class? It's got to do some work. Right. And so you can do the same thing here, if you look at this hard enough, you realize that the outgoing flow homology is exactly the correct sort of target for this vertical composition. Sorry, horizontal composition. That's the horizontal composition of two morphisms. So we've defined all the structure that we need for a two category. Actually, no, we haven't. I still need to define the one. Right, so if I just have L from M to N, I need to define one in the flow homology of L with itself. And I'm going to do it essentially by a picture of a quilt. I'm just going to take that picture. It looks sufficiently silly for being an identity. So, and so now we should, you know, check some algebraic, you know, conditions for two categories somehow, you know, associativity and compatibility of the different compositions and stuff. But really, all of those look incredibly pretty if you draw them in terms of string diagrams. And I think in the interest of time, I will not really go through this example here. But just claim that one just really all we need to do is we need to prove gluing for these pseudo-holomorphic quilts, whatever that may mean. It's something that we prove a lot in the analysis of holomorphic curves. And then some really standard gluing theorems imply the algebraic statements that say this is a two-category. And the latest at this point, one should restrict ourselves to some sort of nice set where we don't have bubbling and transversality issues. So I'll just mumble monotone or exact. Right, and the pictures that you see here, actually, this is associativity of composition in the Donaldson category as Octave defined it. So for us, it's composition of two morphisms. Yeah. So let's see. What do we do with that in life? So first, actually, I think the published paper actually by hand. So we have this. So what we've defined now is a two-category simp shop. And then our paper goes on and constructs a two-functor from the symplectic two-category to the two-category of categories, functors, and natural transformations. And somehow the more I was talking about this, the more I was drawing these pictures, thinking, these pictures really all look the same. And eventually I realized that that's somehow a theorem that I should have learned in the category theory that I never took. If you have a two-category, it somehow comes with a canonical representation. And that representation exactly is a functor to the two-category of categories. So every two-category has a two-functor to this. And so we didn't actually need to construct it, but what we constructed was the same thing, fortunately. So really all you need to do is you need to choose one base object. And in the symplectic category, it's very simple. We take the symplectic manifold, that's just a point. There could be other two functors if you'd like CP3 better as base object. Yeah. They would not be the same. So let's sort of decode a little what that thing does. So an object in our symplectic category is a symplectic manifold, and that gets mapped to the category of morphisms from a point to M. In a two category, the morphism spaces are categories. Right. And this here will be the Donaldson essentially the Donaldson category as Octave defined it, I would think of it as the homology of a Fukaya category, except we have extended somewhat. We've extended in that we're not just looking at Lagrangians in M, we're looking at a sequence of correspondences that starts at a point and ends at M. Yeah. So any other Lagrangian in the world is part somehow of the objects of, you know, a very simple symplectic manifold, which is a little disconcerting. But I think it's still a set. You can make it a set. So we can still make this a small category somehow. Right. Morphisms are flow homology classes. And now we get composition of flow homology classes from the string diagram by just remembering that one side is simply a point. And so if that one side is simply a point, then what I'm seeing here, so I'm supposed to make the outside square just a puncture. So that means I see a disk with three punctures on the boundary, two incoming, that's where I put in the two entries, and one outgoing, that's where I read off. So, hallelujah. I've at least sort of, I've translated the simplest string diagrams into something that looks like a holomorphic disk. Oh. I like to think of this more as a trigon, triangle, holomorphic triangle. All right. But we've done more, right? So we've also taken, well, Lagrangian correspondences and certain them. So here I want to just think about a simple one. So just the submanifold in M0 times M1. And this is a morphism, so I should get a morphism in the category of categories, which is a functor. And so that functor is essentially just the composition functor in my symplectic category. Right. So if I have a Lagrangian in M0, I should get a Lagrangian in M1 out. Except we've done it in this silly way by just appending stuff. So we have this long sequence, and we just add L01 as an extra arrow in the end. Yeah. We might want to remember that really what we want to do is we want to take the geometric composition of this whole long sequence. So far, really nothing interesting has happened. What's interesting now is the question, well, how in the world do I get a map? I mean, so this should be a functor, so it should also act on morphisms. So I need to get a map on flow homology between these two different, completely different Lagrangians. Right? These could be two Lagrangian M0, these could be two Lagrangians in M1. How do I get a map between that? And now, well, we sort of reverse, I mean, honestly, of course, we wrote down this picture first, and then I later on realized that those are all string diagrams. But, so if you start with a string diagram here, what happens is, well, L and L prime are two Lagrangians, and they get both composed with the L01. And now I have a morphism in F, in this flow homology. I want to get a morphism out in the more complicated stuff that sort of sits on the outside here. And I can do this by just marking this side here with the identity. And now I want this rule, so the identity is morphism, the identity to morphism is I just forget that it ever was there. So I just draw the line through. And if I translate this here into a picture on the disk, I see the sort of two circles that are tangent at one point, which is not a good place to do analysis. But we give this a little nicer, you know, conformal structure, and we can do analysis there, and we can count these things. So, and then we can draw even more strange pictures where the puncture now is in the interior of this strange quilt, and this will be what happens on the two morphism level for this functor. So there we should take a flow homology class and make a natural transformation out of it between the functors. And well, this is, well, I think this is the best definition of what this actually is. Took me a long time to really understand what a natural transformation is, and now I'm back to this picture. So that picture is a natural transformation. So this is good. So we have a whole lot of structure maps, but we're still on homology level. So let me sort of say half a slide about what you need to do if you want to do this on chain level. If you want, you know, a triangulated category, Octave had a beautiful explanation of why we pay the price of now doing A infinity algebra always. So that's when we needed grad student slave labor and got Sigi Meti on the project. And because now really you need to count pictures like this, where you have any number of punctures on the boundary and any number of punctures on this interior seam. So if you just sort of look at this as a space of sort of you know, conformal structures on the disk with an extra circle and marked points, this sort of some topological space, it's a poly, you could give it the structure of some sort of singular polytope. It is interesting, but strata, they're called. If you have no punctures in the interior and you fix the seam, you fix the width of the circle, then that's an associahedra. And if you have punctures on the boundary or on the interior, you get things called multiplahedra. And so what we need in order to make our A infinity functors is we need to realize these things as domains for our string diagrams, as things over which we can do our PDE. And that's somehow surprisingly pesky, but it's doable, and we're about to write a general criterion by which it's doable, so nobody else will ever have to worry about it when they have a new polytope for which they want to do it. So that was the claim that we can do everything I claimed before, actually, also for the Fukaya categories. But I still haven't said anything about how any of this relates to the geometric composition of our correspondences. Right. And so that's where not only we had to work hard, but I got to have some analytic fun. Yeah. Not every hard work is fun. So this one was fun. So what we want to prove, really, is if we have this algebraic composition, we would like to say that as an object in the morphism category from M0 to M2, it's isomorphic to this direct geometric composition. And so we allowed ourselves fairly specific assumptions. We wanted the composition to be first a transverse intersection, and then, you know, the projection to be a nice embedding. So that certainly makes sure that this is a nice, smooth Lagrangian. And, well, there will be bubbling, and that needs to get excluded, and not by transversality. So, yeah, no matter how non-generic, it just needs to not happen. Otherwise, I burn in hell. And so then, just in terms of string diagrams, we want to prove this equality. Right. And so that means, really, in our two-category structure, that means we need to look at these two PDEs here, and we need to somehow prove that we're essentially counting the same thing. Right. The problem is that there's, you know, here there's a strip that maps to M1, and here there isn't. So it's really a PDE for different sets of maps. Right. So what we did is we gave this middle strip very small widths and let the widths go to zero and hope that, you know, the width goes to zero, you end up essentially just intersecting with the diagonal here. But, you know, well, my advisor did these things, so I thought I should do an adiabatic limit also at some point in my life. But then you look at it and you go, ooh, the bubbling. So you start drawing the bubbles. So as these two seams come together and collide, so very roughly speaking, you want to think of bubbling as, you know, in this picture, some sphere can sort of develop. It's just like, you know, locally, you sort of, what is that? Like chewing gum, you know, it sort of, it just comes out of your mouth at this one point, you know. And the question is, where in this quilt as you go to zero, do you sort of puncture and blow into it so that, you know, somehow that bubble develops. And the thing is, you cannot control where those two seams end up on that bubble. You know, they could just be gone. One of the seams could end up on there. You could even end up with the two seams still, you blow it up and the two seams still run together. So in the limit, you actually do get the composed correspondence. Or as things blow up, the two seams could stay at a finite distance. And somehow that's the worst case scenario here. Because here, somehow from, this is just an analytic description of the singularity that can happen. Now we can't make choices of new conformal structures. This is just what happens. And what happens here is that the two seams touch tangentially. And I, you know, one fine day, I will make a Fredholm theory for this. But as of now, there is none. So this is not a good PDE for now. So the one thing I can prove is that at least in terms of energy of this thing, the energy is very similar to, you know, a sort of much more tame picture where you just have, you know, an annulus in between. So if you want to understand the possible energy of bubbles, this is the homotopy class that you need to look at. But really, well, there are mean value inequalities, which I will not talk about. Maybe I'll, if there's geometric analysts who have a one question at the end, you could ask me about the mean value inequalities that I use to prove that this type of figure eight bubbling doesn't exist, although I have no good description for it. So essentially my trick is, I look at it, I say, ooh, that doesn't look good. Let me prove that at least some energy concentrates. You know? So if I just do the analysis, okay, don't look too sharp at it, you just sort of do some mean value analysis. All right, some energy concentrates. Well, but then after it concentrated and it went out, I have too little energy for a solution. So it can't have concentrated. So by sort of not looking too hard, I sort of realized it didn't actually happen. But that's a proof that really only works in monotone situation. And that's also, that's the reason why I can absolutely not use any of the general transversality machineries. Polyfolds, Kuranishi structures, virtual moduli cycles, any general construction, you need to know the compactification of your space before. You know, you need to start with a compact set before you can make things transverse. And I just don't have a compact set. You know, I don't know. I really don't want to know what might be sitting in the boundary of my set. You know? And so I need to somehow get transversality with a potentially non-compact solution space. And then after the fact, I prove that actually it was compact. All right, but so if we can do this, then we've proven that essentially, at least if geometric composition is good, then it's the same as algebraic composition. Right? And so we get a new theorem where we have a new symplectic category in which geometric composition actually is the composition when it's embedded. Right? So now we have sort of a geometrically relevant symplectic category. Right. And at the same time, it also comes with a two-functor, right? We're now, right, so strictly speaking, we do this construction by taking generalized correspondence modulo, you know, you can contract any two arrows if the composition is embedded. And so the price that we pay is that we don't quite have a functor into the category of categories, but we get into functors modulo isomorphisms. Right. And, well, yeah. Some people say we have two categories in order to not have to do this. Right. But, yeah. But from this, it's good to, I mean, This is sort of a very general way of saying two special things. The first thing is, well, we have these objects here in sort of a Donaldson category, these generalized correspondences, but we quotient out by an equivalence relation. And we're claiming that they still fit into a two category, so there needs to be a well-defined morphism space independent of, so the morphism space needs to be invariant under this equivalence relation. And so that means, I mean, as a corollary, as a part of this corollary, flow homology is the same when we compose geometrically. So you might have one of those sort of longish quilted flow homology things. And if you can compose, you may, and you'd get the same flow homology answer. So this is the thing that goes into my non-displaceability results. Well, yeah, we can calculate some flow homologies that way. And the other thing is, okay, so here also, not only are we saying that these guys have good morphism spaces, we're also saying, well, actually, right, for each one of those, we have a functor, well, up to isomorphism. Right? This functor is called Don of L01, I guess. Right, this is homology level. So instead of Fuch, I should have Don. This is what I made. So the And so I could compose this with another correspondence L12 to M2, and I would get a functor to M2, right? So now I can compose these two as functors, right? Saying that this is a functor tells me that this should be the same thing as the functor associated to the composition of these two guys. Right. But I could also, right, I might also have, so L12 was an M1 times M2, and these two together gave me L01 composed L12, which lies in M0 times M2. So I might want to compare this with the functor associated to this geometric composition. And if these two correspondences are isomorphic in my symplectic category, right, then I get isomorphic functors out of them. And, well, that, I think, is sort of What else did I want to say? Ah, no, I think not much else. So this is the reason somehow that the 3- and 4-manifold topology works nicely, because, you know, what do we do in 3- and 4-manifold topology? We have one cobordism. We sort of have a might have a 3-manifold, and we might chop it up into different pieces, surfaces, and some little pieces of cobordisms, right? And what we're doing is we're making symplectic manifolds out of them. And then, well, no more space. And then each of these symplectic symplectic manifolds will come with its own category, right? And each of these cobordisms will come with a correspondence. And so each correspondence comes with a functor between these categories. Right? And what I really need to know is that this is another splitting of the same three manifold. And one thing we do know usually is that the Lagrangians, if we do any sort of sensible gauge theoretic construction of these Lagrangians, then the Lagrangian associated to this larger cobordism will be the geometric composition. And so that means the functor that I have here in two steps should be the same as the functor associated to this larger cobordism. And so that's why I wanted exactly this sort of, I don't know. This is a functoriality and it's proven by functoriality, right? So that means there's a whole lot of functoriality that I need to make functors, namely TQ of T's, right? So three functors in the picture. And essentially, somehow, you know, although, you know, I'm an analyst at heart, and I realize that functoriality is good for us. Yeah. So, and hence we made a whole lot of it. So that's the message of the day.